We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead.
Bam, baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hits!
But this is Indiana.
Flips it down.
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
All right, everybody, we are back. Welcome back to Setting the Pace, your go-to Pacers podcast. Today, we are joined by reoccurring guest from SpotTrack. He is the infamous Keith Smith. Keith, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Now, Keith, you're no stranger to Setting the Pace. I think you've been good for 1 to 2 appearances per year, I'd say for quite some time. So always appreciate having you back on.
Yeah, happy to do it. Yeah, that sounds about right. We usually do like something related to the cap and off season, and then generate something in season. So yeah, it's always been great to join you guys.
Hey, love it. Plus also just being able to hear from someone outside of the Pacers perspective, it's always great to hear a non-biased, you know, point of view. So, you know, for everybody who might not be familiar with Keith, Keith covers the Celtics. He's a big Celtics guy. So I think that, you know, the Pacers and Celtics, they've had their battles this year, but this could be potentially two teams that could meet in the playoffs. Who knows? We'll have to see how things shake out. But before we get that far ahead of ourselves, Keith, the perception of the Pacers early on, it was that they were all offense. If you haven't watched the Pacers since November, December, that's typically the thought of this team. No, all offense, no defense. However, things have changed quite a bit. The Pacers have actually become about an average defensive team since acquiring Pascal Siakam. So that says a lot. However, in order for Indiana to be at its best in the playoffs, do you think they need to be the Pacers team of November and December, scoring near 130 points per game? Or are they better off sacrificing some offense for the sake of playing defense?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I like the framing of that. I think you need to be able to play some defense, because I think what happens, and I think Rick Carlisle saw this, he, you know, talked about it often months ago when he was talking about the team, you know, we're really good offensively, but we don't get very many stops and all these things. That was, you know, well in advance of the Siakam trade. But I think what was really interesting is I think he was doing that as like a, we're not going to be good enough, even if we get to the postseason, because of the style we're playing, because I think what he knew was if you go into the playoffs and you don't really play defense, it was a shock, I think, to team systems when they play the Pacers, because it was like, oh my God, these guys, they play so fast. They're up and down the floor. They're flying around. They're doing all kinds of, you know, crazy stuff with offense. And it's just hard because NBA teams, people think they have a game plan for every individual team they play. And more often than not in the regular season, you're just kind of, you set your style and you play. Because it's too hard. There's just not enough time with back-to-backs, even with only one day between games. It's just too hard to come in and be like, all right, let's game plan for the Pacers. But I think Rick Carlisle knew in the playoffs, it's not that way. In the playoffs, you're going to get the same team somewhere between 4 and 7 times over a 2-week period. So you can start to build in things for that specific team. And that's where it becomes really a challenge to kind of still play. If you're going to play a, let's just say, an unconventional type style, it doesn't work as well because teams aren't as shocked by it because they've now seen it, you know, multiple times, or they're prepped for it. So I think he knew we're still going to be good offensively almost no matter what happens. But if we dial that back a little bit to improve defensively, improve our rebounding, do some other stuff, I think he knew that was going to be really important. That's why they've gone in that direction.
Yeah, I think that was vital because he just can't win all these shootouts, you know, 140 to 135 or anything like that. It's just, even if it was getting timely stops, it had to happen for the Pacers. And they've trimmed down their defensive points per game by every single month this year. So that's been great to see. But also one thing that's been impressive is, you know, improving win totals. Now, if you can improve your win total by 10 wins in a year, you made a really big improvement, you know, from last year to this year. The Pacers have now done that each of the last 2 years. They went from a few years ago, 25 wins, to then 35 wins last year, to now 45 wins and counting. What does it say about this Pacers team from essentially a 2-year rebuild?
Yeah, I think, you know, much, much improved. And I think there was a point where last season we thought that might have been the major step forward year. I want to say they were like on pace to win somewhere in the 45, 46 game range halfway through last season. Then I think what ended up happening was they had a bunch of injuries, bunch of guys missed time. I know they went through a period where I want to say they lost something like, 11 awful. Out of 12, and yeah. Then is that what it was? Yeah, it was something in that range. I knew it was really, you know, ridiculous. So there was a point where I want to say they lost like 20 out of 22 games or something. The whole season fell apart. So at that point, they very rightly said, all right, let's not push everybody to rush back. Let's just kind of play the season out, and we end up a lottery team. We're a lottery team, and it is what it is. But they'd kind of set the base. I see them in the Magic almost of having similar kind of re-rises, if you will, where it was last year was pretty good and there were a lot of things that went well and, you know, much improved teams. And then this year were the big step forward years, really pushing into being very good teams and being, you know, teams that are probably going to be playoff teams. Maybe one of them ends up in the play-in. We'll see if that's where that goes. But I think that was huge for both teams. And it's kind of funny that the Pacers did it more with an offensive bend and the Magic did it with more of a defensive bend. But it just kind of proves there's no one way to be a, you know, good team. It's more about your personnel and what fits.
Yeah, I definitely think that both teams are similar where, you know, the Magic had a run last year where they started winning some games when I think that no one expected them to. And I do think it was a little bit late in the season for them, but
yeah,
it showed enough to be a better team. But, you know, I'll be the first one to tell you, and I think everybody else should say the same. Nobody saw this coming. Right now, the Magic are sitting in the 3 seed. It's very impressive. I mean, it almost feels like it doesn't make sense because it's like, they're missing the whole in-between of, like, maybe you go to the play-in first. Maybe you're, like, a top 6 seed. So whatever it is, hey, I'm happy for them, but I'm also obviously very happy for the Pacers. Now, the Pacers want to do everything they can to avoid the play-in. And at times, they've been their own worst enemy because they have lost to some of the worst teams in the league. They've also beat some of the best teams in the league. However, they just took down the Miami Heat to be able to kind of distance themselves a little bit for that 6th seed, that final team that's not in the play-in. However, this is a Pacers team that has multiple wins against Boston, Multiple wins against Milwaukee, Cleveland, New York, Miami, Philly, some of the best that the East has to offer the Pacers have beat. However, is there perhaps one team you think they might match up best against in round one?
Yeah, I'll go back to Orlando. I think they'd be happy if they were, and it's hard to say this, that if they're the six seed and the Magic or the three seed, the Magic have a game and a half lead, but it's also, I mean, they're two games away from each other. So that there's still a lot to be decided there. I think you're absolutely right. Stay out of the play-in tournament. One thing people always think about, and I keep hearing this framed as, well, you can't be in the play-in tournament because you don't want to play Boston or Milwaukee in the first round. Well, that's true, but you don't want to be in the play-in tournament because you don't want to risk losing in the play-in tournament.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people think if you're 7 or 8, you're fine, and that's not just not true. You lose that 7-8 game. Let's say you lose that game and a key player rolls his ankle in that game and can't play 2 days later. Now all of a sudden you're playing a Bulls or a Hawks team that are perfectly capable of beating just about anybody if they have a really good night. And the next thing you know, your season's over, and now you're back in the very back end of the lottery. So that becomes a major challenge where I think, that's a big reason why you want to stay out of that play-in tournament. The other thing I think with the Pacers is, then you get into, all right, who would we like to play? And I think ideally Orlando, just because I don't know how the Magic are going to score enough to stay with the Pacers. And I believe in the Magic's defense, but I think they're susceptible to a team like the Pacers as far as the way they play, where they're a lot more guard-driven. They don't play through the bigs, like as true primary playmakers. It's a lot more Haliburton and Nembhard setting guys up. McConnell, when he comes in, Turner's a shooter. Siakam, sure, he can do stuff off the bounce, but he gets set up quite a bit. So I think those kind of teams give Orlando some trouble versus teams who play through bigs or through wings. The Magic kind of load up on those guys, and they're ready to go. So that's the team I think they'd probably like to play the most, just from the standpoint of you feel the best, because the Knicks, even without Julius Randle, they're still going to be pretty tough. The Cavs, I don't know. I don't think they'd be scared if they had to play the Cavs, right? Mm-hmm. I think they'd be like, all right, then we got to play the Cavs. But yeah, I think, I'd go with Orlando for sure as the team that would best fit them as a first round opponent.
It's interesting because Orlando was the one team that I didn't mention the Pacers have multiple wins over. But the last time the Pacers played Orlando, Indiana handled them. They held Orlando to about 97 points. And I think that it's the defense that you talked about for Orlando that's been really good this year. The offense has struggled a little bit. If the Pacers can play to their style and be an explosive offensive team, that makes you feel that Orlando might not be able to keep up. But at the same point, it's Orlando's inexperience in the playoffs that I think could make a big, big difference, because the Pacers are that other team that is inexperienced as it relates. Sure, you have your Siakams and your Turners that have been there, but there's a lot of players on this Pacers team in terms of top contributors that either haven't played in the playoffs or they've played very minimally, like an Aaron Nesmith or a Jalen Smith, guys that had tiny, tiny roles in small amount of time, when their teams were contenders in the past. So I think that Orlando's still the team I lean, just because we already beat the Bucks 4 times. Could you beat them 4 more? I don't feel good about that.
That's a big ask.
You can't beat a team 8 times in a year. It's just, it doesn't work out that way. And although Milwaukee's not playing their best basketball by any means under Doc Rivers, you know just how talented they are on paper, that they could get it together at any given point. It would be a surprise to see them bounced in round one. So I'm with you. I want to play Orlando. But from your perspective on this, what is the perception around the league seeing the Pacers back in the playoffs? Because you got to factor in this, Keith. The Pacers were swept the last 2 playoff appearances that they've made. It's actually 9 straight losses in the playoffs, dating back to quite a few years ago against the Cavs when Victor Oladipo was Victor Oladipo, 7-game series. But what could be considered a successful playoff appearance, we'll say, for the Pacers?
Yeah, I think if they draw Orlando, I think that's probably going to be like a pick'em series for a lot of people, just because, as you said, neither team is like swimming in playoff experience. So that becomes who do we trust, the defense or the offense more? Which way are we leaning on that? Against anybody else, I think Cavs, Knicks, better be competitive, right? Really better be locked in, and you know, should push that to a, you know, 6 or 7 games competitive series. Then I think if somehow it ended up being Boston or Milwaukee, then what you're looking at, I think there is, can we push them? Can we make them have to work to win the series, as opposed to, are we going to be a little bit more just kind of, we're here, but we're a bump along the way. And that you just don't want to be a speed bump, right? Like, let's just be in this. Let's be, you know, really make them work and let's go. Because then what that does is that allows you to go in the next, or this coming off season and next season, being like, all right, we can re-sign Pascal Siakam. We make a move here, we make a move there. And now we're ready to go, because we have a pretty good core that's ready to win and ready to move forward. Versus if you play a team, one, if you play a team like Orlando or New York or Cleveland and it's non-competitive and they're out in 4 or 5 games and it was really a rough postseason, you start to have a lot more questions about, you know, what are we? You know, well, what did we do? Is the right thing to do to lock in on Siakam for 4 years, you know, a ton of money, you know, somewhere in the probably 120 to 100 to 200 million range? You know, well, what are we doing? Do we really want to do that? Is that the direction we want to go? And those are the things I think that start to become a lot more questionable of, you know, where are we going with the team if it's a non-competitive playoff? So when, if you're facing Orlando, competitive with the Knicks or Cavs, maybe even pull off a win there. If you win a playoff series, you're feeling good, right? It's our first time really back in this in a little bit. We won a playoff series, let's go. And then you're feeling really good about things. If you're competitive, I think you still feel pretty good. This was a great step forward season. We'll be back next year for more. It's just, if you're completely non-competitive and get bounced, that's where people start to have questions about what's the direction moving forward.
Let's go ahead and take a quick break and talk about Unified Healing. You know, whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or simpler, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE system yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in Indiana or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/pace, PACE. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system. Now, let's get back to the show.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Completely agree. I just think that you never want to say, oh man, being a tough out in seven games is a success, because Pacers fans, it's like nails on the chalkboard. That used to be the saying for the team. You never wanted to be a tough out. But I think that given it's been about a two-year rebuild, if they could really show some serious life and know that, hey, this is a young team that's getting experience, getting better, and then you could add to it, I think that the fan base would feel pretty good. But I think if you can win a first-round series, this fan base would be electric right now, knowing what they have in place with a Tyrese Haliburton, knowing that all signs point to that it very much seems that Pascal Siakam is happy and wants to re-sign, and then you still got the young players up and coming, like a Benedict Mathurin, Andrew Nembhard, a Jairus Walker, who we barely even got to see this week. So it feels like there's enough to continuously add to it. But kind of transitioning off the Pacers a little bit and just taking a little bit of a bigger picture at the East, which team in the East do you feel has the most to prove in the playoffs?
That's a really good question. I mean, part of me wants to say Boston, because they are where it's everybody's collectively done waiting. There's no more excuses. This has to be the year. Right, they're coming in. I'm going to knock on wood here, very lightly, so the dogs don't go crazy. But it is, they're coming in healthy, so it should be, this should be their year. I think Milwaukee, because if the Bucks continue to play the way they've been playing now and they get bounced, I think a lot of people are going to be like, all right, was the Damian Lillard trade a mistake? You know, what's happening? I can already see if they somehow lose in the first round, there's going to be a million of the first take style shows that are going to be well, is it time for Giannis to ask for a new team? You know, where are we going with that? So they're definitely one. I think Philly is in a weird spot where it is, you know, they had the Embiid injury. So I think a lot of people had kind of written them off, but they're playing pretty good right now. They've won five in a row. They're, you know, really starting to, I think, hit a good stride going into the playoffs. So they're another team, I think, in the East that has a chance. But I'm going to lean Boston or Milwaukee, because, you know, otherwise the Celtics, it's going to be cool, great regular season. You didn't get it done. No one really cares. And for the Bucks, it's like I said, everybody had these high expectations. And, you know, why didn't it go the way you wanted it to go? And where are we going from here?
I think it's got to be Boston. I think it's just, you know, you look at years ago, that team that pushed LeBron to seven, saying, oh, it's their time now. Then you look at, you know, Boston that went to the NBA Finals against Golden State. And I just think that after paying Jaylen Brown, it's like you want to see this team either, you know, get back to the finals, win the NBA Finals, something of the sort. So I do think they have the most pressure on them. I think when you look at a team like Philly, it's like they started out the season with the James Harden situation, and I felt that they were never able to kind of make a trade to get the right pieces in place afterwards. And Embiid's injury almost, you don't want to say gives them a pass, but that's a team that has not been able to get out of the second round. I think if they made it to the second round, that would be pretty surprising. Not totally off, you know, off the table, but seeing a conference finals run, I think, would shock people. And then you look at a team like Cleveland. There's been whispers for that, you know, Donovan Mitchell doesn't want to re-sign there when the time comes. They got bounced in round one last year against New York. I think that they're a team that has a lot of talent that kind of you need to see something out of them of a run. But for Milwaukee, there's no one else left to fire. I mean, they're paying three coaches right now. So it's pretty crazy between Budenholzer, Adrian Griffin, and Doc. It's like their payroll for just coaches is off the charts. So I think they need to figure something out. But yeah, first round exit again, because got to remember last year, Giannis gets hurt. They lose to Miami early on. I mean, that was something that was very surprising. But I think it's Boston still with the most pressure on them. But then kind of what's that team that you don't want to say Boston's in a position for maybe a teardown, but if things don't go the way that you expect it to, is there a team in the East that you think could look to kind of hit that reset if it doesn't work out and maybe they do get bounced early on?
Yeah, I'm going to take Philly out of the mix here because they've set everything up to do a lot of different roster stuff anyway. They've prioritized having a ton of cap space, and we may hit a summer where it's Embiid and Maxey on the books and not much else, if anything else. So I'm going to take them out of the mix a little bit. Then I think the logical choices then become, I think, the Bucks and the Cavs. I don't know. It would have to be a pretty spectacular failure for the Celtics. Like, they get bounced in round one. They're probably going to have a whole lot of questions of, all right, what happened? What went wrong? What do we need to do to make sure that doesn't happen again? That's just priced in when you're that expensive of a team. Outside of that, I think the Cavs, you mentioned it, the Donovan Mitchell story is already out there. And there's already all these questions of, you know, what's Donovan Mitchell going to do? Is he going to stay? Is he going to go? Does he want to be there at all? What's going to happen with that? And that's going to turn into, you know, it's just going to get louder and louder and louder, especially if they don't have success. And if they offer him an extension this offseason and he says, no, I'm good, I don't want to sign it, they then have to really think hard about saying, all right, he probably doesn't want to be here. We should probably trade him before, you know, he walks away for nothing. And at least if nothing else, maybe we can recoup some of what we gave up to get him. And then I think the Bucks, you just, again, it's kind of like the same thing with the Celtics. It would be a major failure if you fall way short and you're in a position where you're super duper expensive and you just can't be that expensive if you're going to, you know, underachieve. And I'm with you. They don't want to pay a third coach to not coach them while then hiring a fourth coach to come in and coach them. But I do think it would then be some personnel changes. It's not Giannis, not Dame, but I think just about everybody else on the roster would be on the table as they try to retool around those two.
I completely agree. It just feels that, unfortunately, Chris Middleton isn't that same all-star that he used to be, and correct, they got to figure something out. I mean, obviously, you know, the skill set that Jrue Holiday was bringing them is no longer there, and I think that they've had their issues. When the beginning of the year, they were an atrocious defensive team. I think at times they've definitely gotten better, but you know, the fact is they have a losing record with Doc Rivers right now, and that is something that nobody expected. So one other change that the NBA made this year that we've now, as we're coming to the end of the year, gotten to see, the 65-game minimum requirement to, you know, things like All-NBA or win regular season awards. For instance, Haliburton was kind of that player that all Pacer fans had that investment in terms of, could he get to 65 games? Because he's got about close to $55 million on the line. He had a hamstring injury that wrecked nearly 2 months of the Pacers season, I would say, and his, because he needed to get to that 65-game threshold. He just crossed that mark, you know, a few days ago. Great to see. Now it's a toss-up if he even makes All-NBA due to the sluggish February and March. In your opinion, was this a good move by the NBA? And then next, do you think that Tyrese has done enough to earn at least third-team All-NBA?
I think it was a good move to the extent of, I fully understand why the league had to tell the TV partners and then the, like, in-arena fans and those who are buying tickets, hey, you can feel okay that if you go to a game, you're going to see guys play. And so I fully understand why they did that. 65 feels maybe a little high, like 60 maybe more. I also think with certain awards, I would have been okay if they said, hey, to be first team All-NBA or to be MVP,
like,
you got to get to this benchmark. But maybe for third team All-NBA, we can be a little bit more flexible and we can give guys a little bit more room. I think it's the other challenge is a lot of voters have come out and said, like, people who have voted for this stuff for years have come out and said, you know, hey, I kind of took this into account anyway. Like, if a guy wasn't playing X amount of games, I think they tried their best to pick it. I think there also could have been a few more safeguards around, hey, a guy has a legitimate injury, like Haliburton, right? We all saw him go down, and quite frankly, I think, right, that was against the Celtics, if I remember correctly, the kind of last injury he had. And it was one of those where it was like, all right, kind of thankful it wasn't worse because it looked really bad when he went down. And there should be something priced in where, all right, this isn't a rest game. Like, it's not because we were getting to the point where some guys were very much their teams were like, hey, I'm only going to play this guy 55, 60 games because that's all he needs to be good enough to be ready for the postseason, and that's what I care about. And that's the tough thing. I think there was a big misconception too from a lot of fans and people who cover the league that it was the players who didn't want to play, when you know you've covered the team, you talk mm-hmm. to players, the vast majority of the players will tell you, no, I want to play, I want to be out there. It's the team telling me, no, it's best for you to sit. Like it just got very broken, I guess, is the best way to put that. And I like that Tyrese Haliburton kind of challenged it from a standpoint of, hey, I probably shouldn't be playing right now, but I am, so that I can try to hit this, yeah, call it what it is, semi-arbitrary benchmark of just making sure I make enough games. And I think that challenge comes in there is he was the kind of first guy to openly say it. You're gonna have more and more guys say that down the line, and we don't want guys playing through real actual injuries for silly reasons like that, right? It's one thing if it's, hey, I played in game 80 because we're really trying to get in the playoffs and I probably should have sat, but I'm trying to help my team win. That's fine. We get it, and we're all going to applaud that. And you'll be thankful that the guy put it all on the line. But I played this random game in January on a Tuesday night in Charlotte because I got to hit my games played marker. That's a problem for the league.
Yeah, and I think that the league was able to avoid the whole someone maybe just playing like, you know, the tip-off and then coming out or anything of this stuff. Like, this was Tyrese, you know, having to play at least like, you know, 20 minutes a night. And I think that the minute restriction the Pacers had, you know, they try to do everything they can to be able to say, I understand mm-hmm. how $50-plus million is important sure. to you, but we also don't want throwing you out there for 35 minutes a night, risking worsening this injury. But I also do think you saw players that typically don't play as many games, played like a Kawhi Leonard, played over 65 games this year. Look at a Zion Williamson. He played over 65 games. Anthony Davis. Those are guys that typically rest a little bit more than some others. So we did see that, but I also do think as it relates to All-NBA, yeah, I hope that voters take more into account he played hurt instead of being out, but also just how magical he was in the beginning of the season. But there are guys like a Jalen Brunson who I do believe his second half of the year has just been electric. And I do think yep. that Jalen Brunson is an all-NBA level player. Meanwhile, Tyrese Haliburton was named a starter in the All-Star game early on. So you could see Haliburton probably had the better first half of the year. Jalen Brunson definitely the better second half. But there are still guys out there like, you know, like a Steph Curry or De'Aaron Fox or like obviously LeBron, you know, those are guys that are still going to be getting heavy consideration. So it's going to be
If I can jump in there real quick too, the other part's going to be the whole positionless exactly. part of this. And how is that going to impact things as far as the All-NBA voting goes? Because you look at it, like I've seen some people, it's kind of gone both ways. I've seen some people say, well, boy, I'm glad I'm not stuck to three centers and kind of, all right, this guy's not really a forward, but I'm going to call him a forward and hope it'll end up okay as a reason to get Domantas Sabonis in there. Then I've seen other people use it as, well, I don't need to pick a third center, so see you later. You're off the team with him. And it's, to me, that's absurd. Like, I don't know how anybody doesn't have him on All-NBA. Yeah, exactly. The guy's, what did he get, his 61st consecutive double-double last night? And I think if people are bringing up his defense, they're missing everything else that he does. That's great. But I do think that's going to be very, very interesting to monitor and see what happens here, you know, with these guys, because I think some of the challenges are going to be, some players are going to get bumped, and, you know, only time will tell. It's going to be, you know, a couple more months probably before we know the full extent of the voting. But when we do see some of it, we are going to see some things where it is, all right, let's see what happens here. And, you know, why is, you know, player X, Y, and Z didn't make it and players A, B, and C did. And it's going to be those things where it's going to be, well, it was positionless and this and that. Now that's going to add a whole new layer to the debate.
Sabonis is definitely one of those players that it's going to be interesting because he was snubbed from the All-Star game and obviously he's still having a really good season. I think that someone who does get overlooked, and the fact that, yeah, you mentioned it is positionless, that probably hurts him. So we'll see what happens with that, but hopefully Tyrese did do enough to be able to make it all worth it, because if he is to not make an All-NBA team, Then, unfortunately, you look back and you say, wow, you know what? If we were losing games, he was playing hurt, he probably could have used a week off. But, hey, that's you know, hindsight being 20/20.
Exactly.
So we kind of talked about it a little bit before about, you know, the Pacers and Orlando being a surprise team this year. But in your opinion, who's been the biggest surprise team, that whether it's even sitting at toward the top of the standings or maybe just a team that took a leap from the bottom of the standings to towards the middle?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it probably is Orlando and Indiana are two of the biggest teams that jumped. If we look at the West, the Rockets were far better than I thought they would be. I think
almost 500.
Yeah. I mean, they you know, just got eliminated yesterday. So on Sunday, so we're in a spot where it is, let's really kind of, you know, give them their kudos for playing meaningful basketball all the way into the, you know, week to go in the season. Like that's, you know, huge that they still had a chance when this is a team that was one of the worst teams in the league a year ago. So
for a few years,
I think, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it shows, like, sometimes you had the right veteran guys around. Ime Udoka came in there. That team just grew up a lot this year. So, I think, you know, they were definitely surprising. And then, yeah, and then it's hard to pick anybody but Orlando and Indiana on the, you know, more positive side for postseason teams, because both of those teams have been so good at this point where it is, you know, hey, this is no longer fun story. Like, yeah, it was fun that, you know, they stepped forward and made it into the play-in tournament or whatever. Now we're talking about, like, hey, what are your chances of winning in the first round? You know, where are we at with this? And I think that's huge for those two teams. But then if we want to talk about a team that jumped all the way up, Oklahoma City, being that's as good as they are, like, they have, you know, just I thought they'd be okay this year and really continue kind of last year's. They got into the play-in tournament. They got eliminated. I thought we'd see it, like, all right, they're moving forward. They're getting better. But now to talk about them as one of the best teams in the regular season, like, that's huge for them. So there's been a lot of cool stories like that this year.
I think the Thunder for me is the team that took the big, I don't know, it's hard to say the biggest jump because Orlando really did take a leap. But I'm with you. If you saw OKC finish in the fifth or sixth seed this year, I think you'd say, wow, that's really solid. They still have all those picks coming to them. Like, that's a good step forward. This is a Thunder team that is challenging for the one seed in the West. I think that they've been a really good team all year. But then that kind of brings me to my next point. Timberwolves, the Thunder, two teams that are in the top three in the West, both still have a shot to snag the one seed. Do you buy it, though? In my opinion, you got to go through the ringer a bit. I think you need those postseason fails. And the Timberwolves have had that. And it's not even just say the fails. It's also a little bit of success. Like, the Timberwolves have been bounced in round one, I believe, each of the last 2 years. And the Thunder were a playing team. But you haven't seen any of those teams kind of make it to, like, the second round or a conference finals run or anything. So do you buy it when this happens? Because this kind of reminds me of the Kings of last year, who had that leap of three seed. You couldn't really say, I see them as a true contender, and they did get bounced in round one.
Yeah, it's extremely hard for a team to win their first time through the playoffs. It just doesn't happen very often. I think about the everybody talks about, well, that Thunder team was super young back, the one that went to the finals against the Heat. But I think what gets forgotten is they made the playoffs and got bounced in the first round in 2010. Then the next year they went further. They went to the West Finals. They got eliminated by the Mavs fairly easy fashion in five games. And then the next year they took the big step forward and they made it all the way to the NBA Finals. First time through for a team in the playoffs generally doesn't go very well. It's hard on teams. Look at the Cavs last year. First time that group together had gotten into the postseason, and they got manhandled by the Knicks and were gone pretty quickly. So it's that's where I'm a little bit at with the Thunder. A little less so with the Timberwolves, because they've got a couple guys who've done it before. Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, like, they've been through long playoff runs. So I think they maybe have a little bit better of a chance. But I get it. Like, I've been saying for months now, no matter who they're playing, unless somehow one of them lucks out and plays the Kings, I think there's going to be a whole lot of people who are going to be talking themselves into the underdog against both the Thunder and the Timberwolves. If it's like the Lakers and the Suns or something like that, I think you're going to have a lot of people saying, you know, I'm going to pick the team I know has been there, done that over the young upstarts. And it's hard to argue against. I think both of those teams are really good, but yeah, it's exactly what you said. It's just, there's a, in the NBA playoffs, I think more than any other sport, there's a sense of, you got to prove it to me before I'm going to fully buy in to you being a successful team. Look at it, the Nuggets for years were that way. It was like, until I really see it, I don't know. And now I think we're all collectively kind of like, yeah, I trust Denver. They're going to get it done.
That's exactly where I'm at. I'm going to be honest. I did not buy Denver as the true like contender of like, hey, things run through Denver last year. But, you know, seeing them sweep the Lakers, you know, in the conference finals, I think was a very was a big statement to make. And obviously, hey, they got it all done. I still honestly don't think that Denver is being talked about enough for being the defending champs that are tied for the one seed as we're recording this. But, you know, maybe teams.
You know what's funny? I think they're okay with that.
Yeah, like, I think they are too. I mean, I don't think Jokic cares about it. No. I think it's definitely not something that's bothering him. But
yeah, you know, I think the Nuggets. Sorry, I just think the Nuggets have hit their point in this specific team's arc where it is, we don't need to win 60 games and get all the regular season accolades and all that stuff. Now we know what it takes to win a title, and that takes some luck for sure. Nobody's ever won a championship without getting at least a little bit lucky, but also we got to be healthy. We just got to be ready to go come, you know, April 20th, 21st, whatever day they start on, we're going to be ready to go. And I think that's cool when a team gets to that point where it's like, we don't need to go 100 miles per hour in the regular season because we've done that. Hasn't always worked out, and now we know what it takes to win a title. And I just think that's where they're at. That's why I've had some people say they've had a little bit of a up and down regular season. You know, do you fully trust them? I'm like, yeah, I 100% trust them. I have no worries at all about the Nuggets going into a playoff series. I would pick the Nuggets over the field in the West right now, without much of a concern. Like that's just how much I believe in that team.
Yeah, I just think that the chemistry is real good, and you look at it across the board. I mean, it's like, the Clippers have been up and down. The Mavs have gone through some tough stretches at times. They're playing really good basketball right now. But the Suns, they've had their issues at times. I just think that the Nuggets know what to expect. I think that they're a really good home team, and I just think that, hey, obviously, they've been there now after that run last year, which kind of leads me to my final question for you. What is your NBA Finals prediction, and give me a winner?
Yeah, I picked Celtics over Nuggets at the beginning of the year, and I have no reason to change that. I'm going to stick with that. I think they've proven to be – the Celtics have proven to be the best team in the league this season. I think everybody who is maybe waiting for them to stumble in the playoffs doesn't realize how different this team is from previous iterations. I think that's the difference Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis have made. They can attack in a lot of different ways. They still have their challenges in close games. I can't, you know, say any different. I wouldn't ever dare to pretend like they don't, but I think they're like a lot of teams in that respect. And I think they are absolutely dominant at home, and I think that'll hold up. That's one of the better home court advantages. So I think they're going to get through. And like I said, I just trust Denver more than anybody else in the West. I think Denver may get challenged more this year. Actually, let me rephrase. I know they're going to get challenged more this year than last year. Last year, they kind of walked through the Western Conference on their way. I just think there's some good teams. And if nothing else, they're going to be forced to have to work a little bit to win a couple of these series in the West. But those to me, in my mind, they've been the best two teams in the league this season. And I just think Boston is, I know they lost to Denver twice, but I go back to both of those games. They were two of the worst shooting games the Celtics have had. Just all year long, we have not watched the Celtics have many bad shooting games in a row. So you may get two or three of those in a series. Getting four, I'm really not so sure. But I think it would have a chance to be really special. And it wouldn't shock me at all if Denver beat Boston in the finals. It would kind of shock me if that wasn't the finals matchup.
That's the finals matchup that I thought we would see last year. I'm sure I'm not the only one, but I think that that is something that a lot of fans would like to see. I mean, hey, look, this is a Pacer podcast. We love to see the Pacers there, but we also have a little bit of realistic expectations. This might not be the year, but Keith, really appreciate you coming back on. Before we hop off, please tell everybody where they can find you on social media and some of the awesome content that you're putting out.
Yeah, you can find me at KeithSmithNBA over on Twitter/X. You can also find me on SpotTrack for my written work that covers all things contracts and free agency and roster building and all that stuff. We're in the middle of off-season previews right now because we're just going to be rolling on teams that we're going to get through. Well, I say a million. It's 30. It feels like a million at times because it's this time of year is like drinking from the fire hose.